Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we hear about Live Local, Give Local. Four local charities have joined forces to launch this new campaign to build awareness and help in the fight against hunger in the Tulsa area. According to the Community Food Bank of Eastern Oklahoma, they report that about 17.7% of residents here in Tulsa County are food insecure, meaning that they're unsure where they will get their next meal. As a result, the Community Food Bank, Emergency Infant Services, or EIS, Iron Gate Food Kitchen, and Lawyers Against Hunger have come together to both raise donations as well as community awareness to collaboratively help tackle hunger. Today I'm joined by two of the executive directors of the charities. Tom Taylor is the executive director of Emergency Infant Services, and Connie Cronley, in addition to being a commentator here on Studio Tulsa, is the executive director of Iron Gate. They join us today to talk about Live Local, Give Local here on Studio Tulsa. Tom Taylor, Connie Cronley, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Tell us a little bit about Live Local, Give Local. What is this all about?
We are four hunger-fighting charities. We serve the hungry population of Tulsa that is invisible to much of Tulsa, although it is almost of epidemic proportion. So we decided to join forces because we think there's strength in numbers. And this campaign, Live Local, Give Local, is to raise money for our organizations, but to disseminate information about hunger in Tulsa, pretty prosperous Tulsa. We launched it at the Farmers Market on Cherry Street because they focus on local food. And our focus is we are a community, and we are a very generous, caring community in Tulsa, and we want to help our neighbors. And we say that hunger could be invisible. The Iron Gate, which is where I am, is located in Trinity Church, and many of the parishioners don't know it, but some of the parishioners come to us for food. So the hungry could be our neighbor, our sister-in-law, the kid up the street. We just don't see it.
And you know, I heard just the other day that we're now referring to these particular times as the Great Recession. We're still afraid to say the D word, but really, there are still a lot of people hurting. And there are lots of populations, I want to just touch on something Connie said, that you don't expect. And you think of our senior population, they're on Social Security, they have savings, and the savings rates have been less than 1% for 4 years. That money is drawing down. They're not making any interest on their savings for retirement. They're seeing a major dip in their net worth because there's no accumulations. And this is a population that probably most people are not aware of that are probably increasingly food insecure. I hate that term, but food insecure.
Seniors are growing in numbers at Iron Gate at our soup kitchen because they have to choose often between food or medicine. One in eight seniors has to choose between food or medicine. The cost of food is going up. And what we see more is grandparents, maybe a single grandparent, raising the children now. Tom could talk more about that.
And Tom is seeing the other end of the spectrum, which is infants and very young children,
mothers
or sometimes grandparents raising children.
Yes, I'm with Emergency Infant Services, or EIS, and like Connie said, you know, we're seeing the other end is that maybe we're finding people that are what I would call situational. They've never been in a situation to where they've had to ask for assistance before. And our growing need, you know, we primarily focus on like formula, diapers, you know, things that, you know, a up and coming family and, you know, would need to take care of a child and a growing mind. More and more are asking for, we partner with the Community Food Bank of Eastern Oklahoma, as does Iron Gate. And that's one of the four partners along with, you know, Lawyers Against Hunger that make up this coalition that we're doing. And the biggest increase over the last year is I need some help. I need some food, table food for my family, especially kids 1 to 5.
Really? Wow.
Table food like groceries.
Groceries.
At home.
And we provide milk. We do eggs. We do dry, you know, canned foods. And if they're on food stamps, if they're on WIC, which is the Women and Infant and Children's Program, they're getting some assistance, but it's not enough to cover them, you know, through the entire month. Mm-hmm.
I want to ask about Emergency Infant Services because I remember when it first started, it was almost like when people found themselves in dire straits, this was sort of like the first place you would go to as you were moving into the federal system and with WIC and the like. Are you finding that you're having clients that are there longer because WIC is insufficient?
Well, we're celebrating our 35th anniversary in 2012. And so our mission, and we still have the emergency name and emergency infant services, we help clients up to four times a year. Mm-hmm. But we, since we've moved downtown over 5 years ago, we've gone from seeing 7,000 kids to seeing 14,000 kids.
Wow.
So it seems like we have the capacity to help more, but we still can only see them four times a year. But what we do is we refer to organizations like Iron Gate or, you know, the food bank, or try to plug them into a 2-1-1 system so that they know if they're not finding the help and they're not either in between jobs, or most of our clients actually do work, they just don't make enough to make all of the ends meet, or they're one paycheck away due to sickness or a sick child. That makes all the difference in being able to provide for their family.
We forget that for an hourly worker, you know, if you have a sick child, there's no paycheck.
There's no paycheck.
Yeah.
And so we try to refer them. This is where you go to get signed up for food stamps, or this is where you can go in here, or where the, you know, the WIC offices are located. And if they're not, what do they need to get recertified? What do they need to get certified for the first time? Are they new to the state? Did they know that those type of programs are out there?
So this is not a hand out. This is a hand up.
An education.
And certainly EIS, it's really, you know, you find yourself in dire straits, this is the place you can go. Iron Gate, you're seeing a population every day.
We do. We have two programs. We have the soup kitchen, which serves a hot meal every morning, healthy, nutritious. Yesterday we had chicken and dumplings. One of the guests said to me, that cook got down on that. But we also had a gift from the food bank, one of our partners, of fresh corns. We had corn on the cob. And another guest said, corn on the cob? Damn, I wish I had my teeth.
So you have a one meal a day,
we
a hot meal.
We have a hot meal, 8:30 to 10:30 in the morning. Go through the cafeteria line as many times as you want. We served 220,000 people through the soup kitchen last year. We also have a grocery bag program on the weekends, Friday and Saturday morning. And this is like what Tom serves. This is mostly for families, working poor, families who can't make ends meet. And then because we want to get food to kids, we give a gallon plastic bag of healthy, kid-friendly snacks to every Iron Gate kid who comes in. And last year we gave out 6,500 of those. The number has grown 45% at Iron Gate since 2008. What I think is one of the things that's really interesting about our Live Local, Give Local program is here we are, four different agencies, but instead of competing, we're friends. And so we say, it's not about us individually. We don't have to be stars in this. We want to be part of the constellation. It's about the people we want to serve. How can we join forces to get more food to more hungry Tulsans?
At this point, we probably should mention the other two partners, which is the Eastern Oklahoma Food Bank, right?
Yep, Community Food Bank of Eastern Oklahoma, and then Lawyers Against Hunger.
And I know you aren't affiliated with those organizations, but you probably know about their services. And the food bank, when we think of food bank, we think of them giving food to groups like yourself, EIS or Iron Gate, but they're actually, are they doing direct to family food donations
as
well?
They have close to 400 partner agencies in 24 counties.
So they're really giving to
Oklahoma.
Agencies, not individuals. And we're a partner agency. Mm-hmm. Are you a partner agency,
Tom? We are,
Tom?
As well. Mm-hmm.
So we work very closely with them. And they're very, Eileen Bradshaw's chair is the executive director over there, very conscientious about getting food to the people. And the Lawyers Against Hunger, it's mostly a young lawyers group that raises funds for, I think they did Christmas boxes last year,
Thanksgiving boxes.
And then with the turkeys. And they did, I think, a ham and food Easter. Box for Easter. They worked with the food bank. I think they raised $60,000 for that. Many hundreds of families got food for
them. You mentioned your numbers since the recession has gone up, what, 45%?
45%.
Give us a sense of what you're seeing as far as caseload at EIS, Tom.
Like I mentioned earlier, you know, just in the last 4 to 5 years, partly due to the recession and finding the people in need, we've actually grown 50%. So we saw 7,000 kids, and that's how we do number of kids versus how many family members are in it. So we went from just roughly under 7,000 kids to our fiscal year will end June 30th, and so right now we're above 14,000, so just a little bit more than double.
My guests today are Tom Taylor, the Executive Director of Emergency Infant Services, and Connie Cronley, Executive Director of Iron Gate. They're two of the four local charities which have joined forces to build awareness about hunger and hunger issues in the Tulsa area. It's titled Live Local, Give Local, And it's really it's about building awareness. I've been to the website, and you have a very nice way of asking for money. It's basically four little boxes at the bottom, and basically people can choose to support the one they wish.
But all four. We recommend that.
Exactly.
But really, it's about building awareness. Now, you mentioned you went out to the farmer's market in last month, I think, for the first time. What was the reaction?
It was great. We handed out reusable shopping bags, didn't we, Tom?
With
our logo on it, Live Local, Give Local, information cards, and my favorite, temporary tattoos with the logo. I kept mine on for 2 weeks. It was hard to get off, and I thought of all those little children we put it on going around. Tom and I have been talking about numbers we serve, but I think one of our concerns is how many hundreds and thousands of kids out there, families out there, seniors out there, are we not being able to serve? It could be overwhelming, the thought of that.
And well, we know, for example, like 4 out of 5 kids in the Tulsa Public School System is in an economic situation where they're receiving free or reduced price lunches. We're looking at, I think, what is it, 1 in 3? 1 in 4 in Oklahoma is in poverty. 1 in 4 mm-hmm. children in Oklahoma mm-hmm. are in poverty.
That's correct.
So the numbers are not good. And yet there are populations that are just really not aware.
Exactly.
Of this. You know, if you're doing all right or you're making ends meet.
You just don't see it. If you don't see it, it doesn't exist to you. We're all looking at, especially EIS and Iron Gate, we're looking at satellite locations because we're bursting at the seams mm-hmm. and partnering with other agencies to take our services out in the community. At Iron Gate, we wanted to start in the fall an evening meal for families at Jackson Elementary, partnering with Tulsa Public Schools, Unitarian Church, some other churches, to say we will serve a meal and grocery bags and invite other agencies in, like EIS or Family and Children, to say, how could we support this communication, this community? Because with the transportation problem, they can't come down to Iron Gate downtown. Too far.
Yeah, and that's a big issue for all of your agencies, right?
I mean, public transportation.
Transportation, how do you overcome that as far as when you hear from somebody says, you know, I don't have food at home. I really need a way to pick up some groceries. How do your agencies work with this?
Huge problem, and we get that every week. Do mm-hmm. you, Tom?
We
say,
do as
could
well.
You, we're, I'm homebound. I just got out of the hospital. Could you please deliver? And we can't. And that's a service we would like to see somebody pick up.
In our current location, we happen to be 2 blocks away from the downtown bus location, and we'll say, can you make it on a bus? Can you get a ride from someone that's coming with us? And what I think another alarming fact is 17.7% of residents in Tulsa County are food insecure. So that's all of Tulsa County. And then if they're food insecure, what people don't necessarily draw the conclusion is they can't afford gas. They may not have a car. So how do they become uninsecure? So, by calling 211, which is not one of our four partners, but it opens up kind of, is there something in their own zip code area maybe they can get to subside until they can get to a service agency?
Well, what's been the reaction to this idea of the charities basically joining together and trying to build awareness? Are you getting other partners that are coming into this?
We haven't solicited other partners. We like our own company right now. But we just started this in May. But the donors like it a lot because they like to see collaboration. They like to see that we're not duplicating services. One of the things that we all have to watch out for is compassion burnout. There's so much need and there's so many problems coming at us. But we identify our missions very clearly. We are a basic needs organization. We do food. And one of our guests who ate with us at Iron Gate said, it's hard to solve other problems when you're hungry. Hunger becomes the first mm-hmm. crisis.
When I hear the idea of duplicating services, it's like, how can you duplicate being hungry?
You're
either hungry,
what are you
you're hungry
about?
Or you're not. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter, it doesn't matter where you're at. You can have... duplicating that service so it's available to everybody is probably an important attribute.
Well, and with the four agencies, what we do is what we're hoping to whittle away at is that we're going to serve the gamut from like babies to seniors, like we said earlier, and just each one of our organizations kind of fits its own knee with its own age population or all.
Mm-hmm.
So
because Lawyers Against Hunger, their program so far has been food boxes for families for holidays. Mm-hmm. So that's family-oriented. But they distribute them at Iron Gate with the cooperation of Food Bank and EIS.
Yep.
Tom does babies, and we do seniors. I mean, and we both do working poor and working poor families.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the food bank is basically the wholesaler, really, if
exactly.
you want, for a lot of agencies.
They're the hub of our yeah. collaboration.
And I think a lot of people sometimes, you know, I know at least for three of us is that we don't get any city, state, or federal funding. And so we're providing these services to the city of Tulsa, Tulsa County, through the generosity of other Tulsans. And so that was another part of this livelocalgivelocal.com. that's our website. And, the collaboration, again, is that we all, not only are we all helping to, fight the hunger in Tulsa, but the awareness campaigns to let people know, saying, hey, if your giving dollars are limited, look at organizations that are helping make your own backyard a better place to live as well.
I know you're trying to build awareness in the general community about the importance of these organizations. What about other businesses or things, ancillary businesses that could contribute food whether it be prepared or unprepared or the like?
We have certain items we put in our grocery bags, and one staple is peanut butter. So when people want to do food drives for us, we're now sort of focusing and say, would you just do things for the kids pack? Would you just do peanut butter? Or would you do canned meat? Otherwise, we get millions of cans of green beans. We got a lot of cranberry sauce and stuff like that. So we ask schools, we ask churches, we ask civic groups to either compete or to do this separately. One food item.
And I know EIS for many years, yes. You've done diaper drives and all sorts of things like that.
We do. And if people look at it, as an in-kind gift item like you're talking about, we gave over 250,000 diapers out last year. 250,000 diapers. And our clients
don't want to clean that up.
Yeah, four times a year. And so with those diaper, like Connie said, with peanut butter or like giving us diapers or something like that, or cans of formula, it saves us on money so that we can, expend it on some of the other basic service needs so that we can, try to meet all of our clients' needs.
Volunteer time is time and talent mm-hmm. is a big thing that we accept gratefully. Both of our organizations rely on volunteers to serve food, package food, sort the clothes that you, little children's clothes. You have there.
We have over 60 active volunteers that literally more than double the size of my staff each day of the week that we're open. We couldn't do what we do and serve who we serve if it weren't for our volunteers.
So is the awareness campaign mainly about building awareness about the issue? It's also building awareness about the needs to meet this
exactly.
issue, and also, but also volunteers as well.
Yes, because I think when we think of hunger, we in general think of hunger in third world countries or somewhere around the world, and we say, you may not know it, but it's right here in our own backyard, and we need help providing food and serving the food and distributing. Let's help our neighbors because we're all in this together.
Yeah. The name of the site is livelocalgivelocal.com, mm-hmm. and I assume we'll be seeing more about this.
We hope.
You have the local food movement that is certainly mm-hmm. taken off, and I certainly see the playoff on the name of this, but what is the hope? Is there a goal in this awareness campaign or in seeing donations, more people volunteering, more what exactly?
Well, I think...
Or is it just an experiment?
No.
That too.
there's power in partnership. And so, as we mentioned earlier, we all partner together in some form or fashion to help each other out. So if we can spread that awareness to the citizens of Tulsa, so we have window clings that can go in mm-hmm. local businesses, and if someone's new to Tulsa and they have a giving spirit and are able to give, as I said earlier, if they can help the people in their own backyards, maybe get the hand up so that maybe they one day will be able to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. So you can put a window cling in your business window, and then people can go to the website and read about each one of our organizations to see what we're doing, and then maybe it will click. Maybe one will like all of us, or one will like one mm-hmm. of what we do. So it's just,
We do hope to get financial contributions, mm-hmm. and since we just launched this in the spring, our financial goal, for those of us who like number goals, is to raise $25,000 by the end of summer to be divided among us in any amount. The widows mm-hmm. might, the whole 25,000.
Well, are you making progress towards
that? We are, slowly but surely. And they're, for us, I don't know about you, Tom, they're all new donors. People who are new to the problem, new to our organization, and they're all online donors.
That is correct. So the awareness factor of it is working. We're exposing what we do in the community, what we already do in the community, to donors that didn't know we existed.
No.
I want to say one thing. I want to tell the legend of the starfish. Is that okay?
Sure.
We all know
I
this.
Don't know what the legend is.
Well, I'm so pleased. I thought I was the only one who didn't know the legend of the starfish. When we talk about the magnitude of the need and the number of people who are hungry, it seems overwhelming. So it reminds us of the legend of a starfish. A little child, a little boy, was walking along a beach that was strewn with the starfish that had washed ashore. And he would pick up a starfish and throw it in the water. Pick up a starfish, throw it in the water. And an adult came along and said, "Son, I hate to tell you this, but you're wasting your time. Look, there are starfish, hundreds, thousands of them, washed ashore, all up and down." And the little boy looked right, and he looked up, and the man said, "You can't make a difference to all of those." And the little boy picked up one more starfish and threw it out to sea, and he said, "Maybe not, but I sure made a difference to that one."
All right, live local, give local. LiveLocalGiveLocal.com. You can learn more about EIS, the Community Food Bank, Lawyers Against Hunger, and, of course, Iron Gate, doing great work in our community. Tom and Connie, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you
for having
us.
Tom Taylor is the Executive Director of Emergency Infant Services, and Connie Cronley is the Executive Director of Iron Gate, two of the four charities that have teamed up to launch Live Local, Give Local. Their website is livelocalgivelocal.com. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Well, our commentator on pop culture has been watching a bit of television lately. Here's Ian Scholes.
Ian Scholes, I checked out the new comedy in HBO, Girls. It has come under some criticism because it's so very, very white. Not a criticism I remember being leveled at Sex and the City, another show about unpleasant white women in Manhattan. The unpleasant white women and girls are younger than the Sex and the Citizens and much more clueless and entitled. I decided I wouldn't be watching it anymore after a scene in which the central young woman in the show, during a job interview, makes a joke about date rape. She didn't get the job, of course, but who would do that? What kind of person on what kind of planet would make a joke about date rape during a job interview? Now, this may be a humor trend. I see it in Ricky Gervais' comedy, in Curb Your Enthusiasm, among other places, in which a person is thrust into a situation. As I watch this situation unfold, I try to imagine the most clueless, tactless, politically incorrect action the person can take to move the situation into total unpleasantness, and then, lo and behold, that person does it. It doesn't make me laugh. It makes me squirm. I guess there are audiences out there enjoy squirming. I'm not one of them, unless, you know, zombies are involved. While I'm on the subject of television, what is it with Mad Men? I only watched the show once and didn't quite get the appeal. You're supposed to feel nostalgia for a vanished era and despise it at the same time? Why not just watch reruns of Peter Gunn? Both the online magazine Slate and Vanity Fair writer and blogger James Wolcott do recaps of Mad Men every week. Why? If you've seen the show, you don't need a recap, and if you haven't, why would you want the plot point spoiled for you? The online gossip site Gawker, by the way, does recaps of Girls, but may stop soon out of boredom or a severe snark shortage. And this brings me to The Wire, which I understand was, like, the best show on television ever. Didn't get that one either. It was like Naked City on steroids or something, wearing its urban, gritty, liberal, despairing heart a little too loudly on its sleeve. The show has a continuing afterlife on DVD, and creator David Simon made some annoyed remarks to the New York Times about viewers picking the show apart and not viewing it as an artistic whole. This, in turn, annoyed some fans of the show, who apparently think they can admire The Wire any bloody way they feel like admiring it. Mr. Simon apologized for what he considered a poor choice of words, but has now launched a blog called The Audacity of Despair, of course, and it is world-weary as all get out. He expands on the point he was trying to make. Quote, "All of these Wire brackets have cropped up in various websites, so I think we're talking about all the faux tourneys in Omar versus Stringer and which season is worst and 25 best scenes lists and such. Folks slathering that silly stuff on the cake weren't there when the show was starting to survive. And now, 4 years later, they're busy hacking the thing into pop culture nuggets, which would be cool if anywhere in there an actual idea got discussed or argued or considered," unquote. And he compares the shallow treatment The Wire has been getting from list-happy fans to the shallow media coverage of the shooting of Trayvon Martin. I say, whatever, but I'll insist to my death that Omar is, in fact, the coolest character on The Wire. And frankly, I'm not even sure who he is. I gotta go.
Ian Scholes is our commentator on pop culture here on Studio Tulsa. He is a writer and essayist based out of San Francisco and a regular contributor. We now turn to This Land Press for an audio feature from producer Abby Wendell. Jack Seehofer spent almost a decade as a professional cyclist before becoming a coach for Team Type 1, a professional cycling team. Here, Seehofer shares some of the trials and triumphs from his first trip to Africa with the team.
Growing up in Oklahoma, I knew I wanted to go places and travel places. I just didn't think that the bike would actually be the thing that got me there.
I am Jack Seehofer. I'm the former elite level cyclist. I was signed as a regional pro I'm starting to travel on the racing circuit throughout the U.S. I was making some money racing, but I was starting to realize that I was pretty good as a racer, but I was a lot better at teaching other people how to do it that had more natural ability than I did. So I ended up making my transition over to the management side of things. I went to Team Type 1, professional cycling team. I've traveled just about everywhere now. Singapore, Belgium, Italy, France, Switzerland, China, South America, Rwanda. That was my first trip to Africa. First thing I had to go do was go get vaccinated. And so I was like, okay, where am I going here? The only information that I had beforehand was basically I would get pretty much everything on site, where the start was, how to get athletes from point A to point B, trying to find cars. We ended up having a 1994 Toyota Carina that had no shocks in the back because the shocks were totally destroyed. That was our team car, and we're part of what's called the caravan. So you have your group of riders, chief official. Next car is the medical car. And then from there, you have the team cars. The first day of driving the team car on stage one, we're going up and down these hills, and we're going down this little mountain descent, and start stomping on the floor. And I'm stomping on the floor, and we have our team doctor in the vehicle, and he looks at me. He's like, what's up? Doesn't look like you have any brakes. I'm like, yeah, pretty much. We have no brakes. We have no brakes now. One of the next little parts of the course, there is a good uphill. So get up to the car in front of us, and I try to explain to them in what broken English we could that when they brake, they needed to brake really, really hard, because I would be on their bumper and they would be using their brakes to stop two vehicles. I rode the car's bumper in front of me for about 40 miles, I think. It was a fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants event, but managed to pull it all together. I had a couple of the top athletes there, and one of the first things I learned was Mutsu Gaikonji, which meant cold beer.
Racing Around the World is an audio feature produced by Abby Wendell for This Land Press. You can hear more at thislandpress.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.